If you'll take your seats, please, we will call the meeting to order.
Are you calling?
Yeah.
Richard West, would you be kind enough to call the roll?
Yes, Chair Bale. Regent Ball. Regent Brinkley.
Present.
Regent Henson.
Present.
Regent McKinney.
Present.
Vice Chair Milliken.
Present.
Regent Nichols.
Present.
Regent Spiller.
Present.
Regent Thomas.
Present.
Secretary West, present, and Regent Winger. All right, Mr. Vice Chair, we have 10 regents present, which represents a quorum of the board.
Very good. Since our last meeting, we had a highly successful graduation ceremony on May the 5th, which I think we're all very proud of. Our in-person ceremony was, I felt outstanding. And we had an outstanding recognition ceremony on May the 6th, something that I think our university has the right to be proud of. We've gotten some good press as far as some of our endeavors are concerned, and our canoe team, those guys who came here and made a presentation to us, has scored well, which we're very proud of for those engineering students. I think that's outstanding. And I think those are just some kind of feel-good comments that I think are appropriate at the outset.
Third in the country.
I think that's tremendous.
Mm-hmm. Best finish ever.
Top 10 in every category.
And they're all getting all fired up to go again.
They are.
To make another concrete canoe. I think that's great. The first item is action item number AA1, approval of faculty emeritus for Drs. Kathy Carey, Daniel Meyer, and Julie Ellis. Regent West, are you making these presentations?
Actually, I'm going to call Provost Fisher to make these presentations.
So I want to take just a few minutes to tell you something about the people who we want to be emeritus here. They all have served at the university for 10 years in distinction. And I want to talk about each one personally. Dr. Kathy Carey was professor of economics. Dr. Carey joined the WKU Department of Economics in 1992 and later served as the Center Director, Department Chair, and Interim Dean. The ways in which Dr. Carey contributed to the college and university as a whole are too numerous to state, but it was certainly related to what was best for the students and always trying to do what's right for the students. Dr. Donald Meyer joined the WKU Department of Economics in 1986 and later served as the Associate Dean for the Gordon Ford College of Business. Dr. Myers was instrumental in fostering study abroad programs during his service as the International Officer for the Gordon Ford College of Business. He led multiple study abroad programs that provided rich educational experiences for many students. And lastly, Dr. Julie Ellis, Professor of Engineering and Applied Sciences. Dr. Ellis joined WKU as head of the Department of Engineering in 2009 and served in that role until 2016. Dr. Ellis served as Professor of Engineering and Applied Sciences until her retirement in 2020. And with that, I think all of them made huge contributions to the institution, and it would be an honor to give them emeriti status.
Have any questions or comments?
I would just note that one of the odd distinctions of serving as a faculty regent on this board is recognizing people that you've worked with as their friends. And it's just to reflect back on the work they did over the years. And so these are deserving recognitions.
Any other comments? The chair would then accept a motion to approve emeritus status for Drs. Kathy Carey, Daniel Myers, and Julie Ellis.
So moved.
Have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Motion carries unanimously. Second item is
big red backpack.
That's it.
It's very exciting.
I knew that one. So I want to take a few minutes today to talk to you about a project that took place over the last year or so and is kind of a combination project between three groups on campus. What we'll talk about, this first day complete, or the Big Red Backpack, was originally brought to us by the student government. The student government was interested in it because they had seen it at other institutions and wondered if it could work here. And they brought it forward and said, we would like to figure out how to make this work on this campus because we think it will help us with affordability of textbooks and material associated with classes. They brought us Jennifer Tugas in as the lead in that, and then she dragged me in. And together, we put together a committee. We looked at it with the students, and what we came up with, you'll see in a minute. I want to describe the program. So it's called First Day Complete, but really on this campus, everybody knows it as Big Red Backpack. And when you look at this, what you see is that it's there to solve a problem. The problem it's meant to solve is that students are foregoing buying their course material, and we believe, and so do lots of other people, that it's negatively affecting whether they're successful or not in classes. And when you look at it, it's a trend that's occurred over the years. In 2017, 40% didn't have their materials the day they started class, to now, 29% have materials. So that leaves a huge number without materials. 71% don't have their materials. And the quote you get all the time when you ask a student why they don't have those materials is, I don't have the dollars or cents to buy those materials. At least right now. They may buy it later, but they're not prepared the day we start class. And some of the stuff you see out there is the following. 85% of students delay purchasing course materials, mostly because of funding. And 50% say that that negatively affects their grade. And if you ask them at the end of classes, what you see is 7 in 10 says, I think I would have done better if I would have had the material the first day of class. So there's a problem out there. There's a problem that we need to think about solving, and hopefully figuring out how to do it in a more effective and a more, I guess, efficient way. So having said that, what we came up with, or what we saw when the students brought us, was introducing First Day Complete. It's supposed to help with student success by doing a few things. First, it's going to be of the students, all of their books and materials before the first day or on the first day. So a student will come, pick it up in a box, everything will be there, it's a concierge service, it works perfectly. Secondly, the cost of that will be put either in their tuition, which we've seen in some groups, but out on this campus it'll be a fee on their bill. And additionally, hopefully what it does is, one, reduce the stress, that is, of trying to find the material, trying to catch up, trying to do all the things that happened because you didn't have it, and reduce the cost for the students in the long run. So that gives you an idea of what we're putting in. When we looked at it, what we saw is that it has some incredible benefits. We are already in First Day, which was a way to get them what would be digital copies of stuff on that first day, if it was available, those types of things. But in this new process, what we will do is expand that. It could come in print or digital. You will see the concierge service. You will also see that you will have an opportunity to opt in or out. There's lots of things that will occur that are different in this. And we feel that this new way of doing it will allow every student to make the choice to have their materials and books that first day of class.
What do you mean you opt in or out?
Great question. So a student can shop around. So at no point do you have to be in this. So giving you an idea, I'll give you two examples. One is, in some cases, we have OER, which is free books. In other words, courses have developed their own books and they're there already and you don't need to buy a book. If you have a couple courses like that, I'm going to tell you to opt out because you won't have to pay as much as you would for this program. And I'll show you what I mean in a minute. And students can opt out for that semester and then be right back in the next semester. So students have an opportunity to do shopping to find the cheapest way to get books and to move forward in this case. So they're not mandated to be in this program. Other things you'll see is that in some cases you may find the books cheaper at Amazon, or you may find them cheaper somewhere else, and you find out that you can collect all your books cheaper. You have a way that you can do that way too. Again, you could opt out. So there's no mandate to be in this program at this point. Does that help? Is that okay?
Yeah, that answers my question.
Okay, so this is the program. So I think it does a few things. It creates equitable access. That means everybody has an opportunity to have that material on their first day. That's something that's incredibly important, and especially at an institution with the demographic you see of students on this campus. Additionally, it's convenient, right? You show up on campus, you walk to a place, they hand you the box, you have everything there. We've even talked, Ethan and I, about having it in front of their door as they arrive, in some case, maybe in the future, where they would just go to move in and the books would already be in front of the door and be able to walk them in. So there's lots of ways to think about this. And affordability, the estimate is about 35 to 50% savings over the lifetime that you're here buying books and material.
Do we realize those cost savings?
How?
Yeah, where do those cost savings come from?
Well, it comes from buying it in bulk, and that's...
We're passing on the cost reductions to the students.
Yes. Yeah.
Less markup from a private business.
Well, it's Barnes & Noble who's doing that at this point, and I'll show you what they came up with is where they are happy with the number that it costs per credit hour, and I'll show you what that is in a second. So having said that, what you see is that 74% of the students who are in this program, there's about 100 institutions in this program, I believe now, say that this has helped them be prepared for their classes and that it's helped them get better grades. And when they do a survey of students who have graduated who have had this program during the 4 years, 66% said it had an impact on their success. So it's been proven to show that there's a positive to this, and it's allowing students to get what they really need. And I would tell you, I remember being a faculty member, and I always wanted them to have that stuff first day. And in some cases, faculty members have already given them stuff to read or do before first day. This is an opportunity to get to catch up and stay above where you want to be. So having said that, I don't think that's the only good thing about it. Some of the other things that allows it to be implemented on this campus is faculty maintain full academic freedom. Choose the books you want, do the stuff you want, do all of that. They could choose it in digital or print format. They could choose any publisher. It works great. In addition, I think there's some others. It's easy to implement, and you have the opt-out. I think the opt-out is important. I think a student should be able to shop around and find the best deal, and opting out allows them to do that.
I don't understand that aspect of this program.
Okay.
To me, that's a negative thing. If we can't buy them in bulk cheaper than a kid can buy it at the bookstore or on Amazon, then something's wrong with our program. We ought to be able to buy that stuff cheaper than any individual could because we buy it in bulk. And I'm afraid that if you stress the opt-out aspect of it, a lot of kids will opt out for financial reasons or other reasons. I view this as a real, this lack of having the material first day as a real issue.
Sure.
Because been there, done that.
Sure. I think everybody has.
Yeah, and I know how that works. And if you get behind, the first week or something because you don't have your books, then you're behind all semester a lot of times. So you don't get caught up. And so, I love the program. I'm not against the program. I'm just concerned about this opting out facet.
Well, I think the students asked for the opt out because there's a number of classes on this campus that have open educational resources, which are free resources that they use within the classes, so there's no book. And what they didn't want to have to do is pay for those credit hours for that class and not really get something for it. And that was the reason. And what they wanted to do is shop around to see which was cheaper. In other words, if I have three of those classes and I only need two books and the cost is $200, and this program, and I'll show you in a minute, is $24 a credit hour, but it's only $360 per semester. If they can get it for $200, they want to be able to still be even more affordable.
I see that point. I like the program. I don't mean that.
No, that's fine.
I'm just,
if I could just jump in, please. From a faculty and a parent perspective, I think that I'm seeing a transition, and I've worked for many years to try to lower the cost of books for our students, because when you have a student who comes to you and says, I can't buy the book until I get paid, and I'm waiting to get that done. And so in my department, we leveraged our ability, the number of students we had in our classes, to negotiate with the publishers and get a cheaper book. But they still, if I went in and said, you're going to get this book cheaper if you buy it from me than going out and buying on your own, they would say, I don't trust you, I don't trust the bookstore, I don't believe you, I'm going to go out and buy it, and they would pay more money. We are transitioning, I think, in our student attitudes from that group that said, I'm going to go do it myself, I'm going to prove you wrong, I'm going to rent them, I'm going to do other things and find it myself, now to a group, and I'm just seeing this coming through, that wants the concierge service. Deliver me the books. Don't make me go out and do all that work. But we still have a significant percentage of our students who say, I'm going to do it myself because I think the institution is trying to, whatever, just a distrust here. So that quite often they're wrong. But still can't tell them what to do. You give them that freedom. And I think that the freedom is a very appreciated thing here.
How does this affect the used book market?
Pardon?
How does it affect the used book market, where I resell? I buy my books at this cost, but I resell them, and that's...
So they come back, right? In both of those programs that we have had, you give them out and they come back.
So do we buy them back from the students?
No, because it's a rental kind of system. But the truth is, the good part about this rental system, most rental systems in the system that I've ever seen, you have to use the books forever, or you have to use them for a minimum of 3 or 4 years. That's not true in this system. You could change year to year to year to year. So we're always up to date, and we can be at the cutting edge of what the books are that are available.
Quick question there.
Sure.
So let's imagine that there's a really good comprehensive reference book that a student might want to use in the first few years of their career. Can they, at the end of a semester, opt to purchase it at full price?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, most rental programs have a way for you to do that. Makes total sense, because I have done that.
Yeah, when I did all this, that didn't work.
So I think some of the other things we were talking about, some of the other things it does is it's marketable to students, I think, because it's a way to look at affordability related to education. I also see that it doesn't go against OER. We will continue to have our OER grants on campus to try to create our own resources, open resources that we don't charge the students, because ultimately I would say, and I will say it in every open forum, if we could get all classes to be OER or open resources and not charge them for books or for material, that'd be great. But that's a long haul and it will take time. So this is kind of something that's in between to increase affordability. And what I think is this first time around, we'll have a launch team here. We'll have people to support it. We'll make sure it works and it goes through, and when we reevaluate it. But I think the big part of it is that students are prepared on day one. And that helps student success, and that's really important, especially at institutions like this. And that was the reason behind it, and that was the reason that the Student Senate brought it to us at that point. So having said that, that's where we were. So the cost is $24 per credit hour. If you're a student and it's 15 credit hours, it's $360 a semester. What you see is in our... Where we recommend is that you put away $500 per semester right now for books and material. And I would say that's the average, but if you look out there, there's nursing that's in some realm that nobody knows, because books there, $340 is one book in most cases. $360 could be one book. And if you look at sciences are also in that way, and there's other ones on campus, as we've talked, that... This will be a great move for a large number of students that are on this campus. So I think what you see is we're trying to do what we really need to do, right, is to make education more affordable for students and looking at ways to do that, as well as looking for ways to increase student success. and where we are. So you see the implementation has been occurring since December. We're in June. They're in the process of student order packaging and getting ready to put those out and have them delivered and get them picked up. And hopefully we will have a successful launch come fall of 2022. And with that, I'll answer any more questions.
I have a question.
Sure.
Is the box going to be red?
So we have gone around and around and around, right? It's called the Big Red Backpack. We thought it would be really cool if you could figure out a Big Red Backpack, right?
Right.
We couldn't figure that out. Yeah. I don't think we have a red box.
I actually haven't seen the design for it yet. I need to ask for that. But
I think we can get Big Red on it.
Yeah. I think we can. Yes.
Julie would be happy to consult.
Yeah. but I think we have a.
And I'm still one of the best customers of the WKU store.
Yes,
that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, we did talk about that because it only fitting, right? If you had a backpack or something red or something on it at that point, for sure.
If you don't mind interjecting, one of the things that as we thought about this program, it has the opportunity to touch every student every semester. And so one of the things I reached out to Ethan and Dr. Logan, and I said, we could put something in there that, you know, resources, is it an inspirational message from leadership? We have the opportunity to touch every student, you know, with this program. And so that's one thing that I think is really neat and we can capitalize on. We are working with housing master plan. There will be a dedicated part of the programming in master plan where students in the master plan program can come and get their books without anything else competing with them. So we're working through that. We're also going to be using the first floor parking structure, too, as a drive-through. So we're going to get some real creative ways of, when we think about the logistics of distribution for 16,000 students. This will be part of it. So we're working with athletics, we're working with housing, we're working with various groups to figure out how to get all of these books to all of these students without having every single one of them stand in line at the bookstore. But implementation is full speed ahead. We finalized the opt-out program process and getting that up on the website. There is a website, wku.edu/bigredbackpack. That's going to be the central repository of all information for anybody. And we had a marketing meeting yesterday where we were talking about what are the final pieces for direct communication, email communication, for both existing and incoming students. So it is it's definitely a large shift, but I don't think I could have given a better presentation. You're going to come work for Barnes & Noble.
No thanks.
And I will say that Provost Fisher has been a strong advocate, as Dr. Logan has been, a very strong advocate for this program, and it really has the opportunity to increase student success.
Yeah, I would say I was one of those kids, right? And that was a long, long time ago, but I didn't have the money a lot of times, and I was a science major, which means the books weren't cheap, right? I mean, even then, if somebody would have told me you could have them for $360 then, I would have ran to the program, because I was paying more than that back, a long, long time ago.
Well, I think you have identified a real problem and are addressing it. And I thank you to be commended for that.
That would be the students. The students were the drivers of this. They should be the people. I mean, they brought it to us. It made total sense to us when we saw it. But they saw it and saw how it could help them. I mean, and more power to them. They are constantly looking at how they can make college affordable. And that's a big question that sits out there right now.
Bud, is there a way to be able to donate to the Big Red Backpack if there are students that are struggling to purchase books and like to the Opportunity Fund or something?
Oh, I'm sure we could.
Those
yes.
are the kind of things. I'll
yeah, like it's earmarked for that. We can figure out how to do that for sure.
And I'd just like to note, I'm sure you said this, I'm sure you talked about this, but just the way that this removes one of those hurdles for first-generation college students
yes.
who have no idea. And I've sat down with some students like that before they get here, and we use all this terminology and they have no idea. So just solving that problem for them, they will remove the tremendous hurdle. And then I was just curious if Matthew had anything to say. He's been standing there, and I know this came from the SGA, so I'd like to give a shout out to him, if possible.
Thank you, Miller. All I say is I'm incredibly proud of the work that he's done. I really appreciate all working with him. Thank you, Matt.
Great program, I think. Thank you for the presentation. I know we kind of jumped on you.
No, that's okay. I'm getting used to it in this meeting. I'm kind of having fun.
All right. The executive committee, the first item under the executive committee is the approval of an addendum to the athletic employment contract.
Mr. Chair, is my privilege to bring to the board for its the executive committee for its consideration an addendum to Todd Stewart's employment contract. One of the things you learn in higher education is the last thing you want for a coach, an athletic director, or a university president is for them to be in the final year of their contract, because that signals to them, but more importantly to the marketplace, that they might be available to be recruited away. And we do not want Todd Stewart to be recruited away for lots of different reasons. The first of which is we have 3 to 5 years of athletic projects that are just getting ready to kick off, and we need to make sure someone is here to see those through. That's number one. But most importantly, Todd is a good partner, has created remarkable results within the athletics program, not just on the field of competition, where we are the most winning of championships in Conference USA, but also in the classroom, with our student athletes graduating at a remarkable pace, far outpacing the general undergraduate rate, and performing well in the classroom with an overall GPA well above 3.0 for all of our student athletes. And so we're proud of that work. We're also proud that Todd, for those of you who don't know it, has been recognized nationally for the work that he does for us. He is the 23rd ranked athletic director in the nation, ranked number 2 among G5 programs, group of 5 programs. I get nervous every time there is a Power 5 athletic director opening, because at some point, probably, Todd will get recruited away from us. But we don't want that to happen anytime soon. We also can't afford to pay him millions of dollars a year. So we don't have that problem today, though. What we do have is the issue of renewing Todd's contract so competitor institutions cannot recruit against us using that. And number two, he has earned and deserves this addendum. The Hilltopper Athletic Foundation has generously agreed to fund the totality of this increase. So I have a budgetary effect. With that, I just want to say how thankful I am for the work that Todd continues to do for our institution. As he will say, athletics is the front porch of the university. It attracts a lot of attention for our institution. And I know some folks who are not interested in athletics wish we wouldn't have it. I have to explain to them, just like our financial aid program, if we didn't participate in Division I athletics, the number of students who would choose to go elsewhere is large. And we know that through lots of the work we've done with recruiting and admissions. So with that, I stand for any questions, and I'm pleased to bring this to you for a committee vote.
I think we're all extremely proud of the graduation rate and the GPAs of our student athletes. I think that is just outstanding, and I know Mr. Stewart has contributed to that result as well as many other results. Do we have any questions or comments anybody would like to make? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to approve the third addendum to the athletic director employment contract between Western Kentucky University and Mr. Todd Stewart.
So moved.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Hearing none, motion carries unanimously. The second item is the approval of an addendum to the athletic employment contract of our head coach for our softball program.
now that we said nice things about Todd, he can come present this.
He can come say nice things about it.
Well, first of all, Dr. Kamani, I appreciate your comments and certainly appreciate the support of the board. May 9th was the 10-year anniversary for me as the athletic director, and I would just tell you it's been the honor of a lifetime. I have a terrific partner here who we believe in this university and where it's headed. And while I'm very proud of what's been achieved in the last 10 years, I'm more excited about what lays ahead. And just appreciate the opportunity that you've given me to continue to lead the charge, and we'll keep climbing, I promise you that. With respect to Coach Tudor's contract, when I stood in front of you a little while ago and talked about Tyson Helton's contract, you know, I pointed out that he'd been our head football coach for 3 years, and we'd been to a bowl game each of the 3 years, and he was still here, and that's been a little unusual. You know, we've lost coaches when they've had that kind of success, and what I would say about Coach Tudor is she's an alum of Western Kentucky. She's been here 9 years. She's won 5 conference championships, and this past year actually set the school record for highest winning percentage in a season. And yet she's still here. And so I feel like with these coaches, when they're really, really good at what they do, we need to do everything we can to retain them, because continuity gives us a better chance to continue success. So that's what this does. This keeps her here. She wants to be here and keeps that program going in a great direction.
Have any questions or comments? If not, the chair will entertain a motion to approve the addendum to the athletic employment agreement between Western Kentucky University and Amy Tudor.
So moved.
Have a motion to have a second.
Second.
Motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Hearing none, motion carries unanimously.
Thank you.
The next item is the approval of the philanthropic naming of Century Park for ROTC physical training facility. It looks like we have three presenters here. Welcome. Very good to have you.
Good to be here.
Amanda, are you good if I take this?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, good. So good afternoon or good morning, wherever we are, everyone. I am about to go a little out of order because we are pushing up against a retirement ceremony at 11 o'clock that Colonel Green is attending. And so while it's not his own, he is currently walking there. You cannot see that happening this morning. He is also retiring. And so today we're going to do a few things and out of order. First, we're going to recognize Colonel Green's service to our Hilltop Battalion. He joined us in 2019. For a 3-year tour as our professor of military science, and he is heading off to retirement. He chose WKU as his final tour of duty for the Army after a very distinguished career of service. And so just briefly reading his retirement remarks, Colonel Green, official Downing Scholar, he is a Downing Scholar, and his official bio reads as follows. He earned his commission from the United States Military Academy at West Point in 2002, earning a Bachelor's of Science in Mathematics and Physics. Colonel Green was selected as a Downing Scholar in 2010 and earned his Master's degree in Public Affairs with a focus on international relations from Princeton University in 2012. As an infantry officer, Colonel Green served in a variety of conventional and special operations units from platoon leader to special commander, deploying 10 times in support of the global war on terror. His awards and decorations include the Bronze Star Medal for Valor and Ranger Cab. Colonel Green's service as the professor of military science at Western Kentucky University constitutes his last active duty assignment. We are extremely honored that Morgan chose WKU as his first career assignment, and we are grateful for his service to the Hill. Among the unit's accomplishments during his leadership, the WKU ROTC Battalion was among the first in the nation to incorporate the Army's new physical fitness standards, establishing Century Park, as noted today, establishing a 4-year peer mentoring program, including elements of progressive peer leadership, such that senior cadets run the program, ensuring sustainability in an environment of rotating leadership, and he served to significantly strengthen the unit's relationships with our ROTC alumni and other campus units, including facilities and athletics. It's notable that the 2002 graduating class at West Point was its 200th graduating class. As a graduate of West Point's bicentennial class, Colonel Green's final official act of service was to actually commission our WKU ROTC Hilltopper Battalion 100 class. So there's a little symmetry there that I think is pretty special. His wife, Becca Ray, is a tremendously talented Nashville-based songwriter, and together they have two beautiful daughters, Annie Lou and Maybelle. And so, Morgan, I know you're heading off into a retirement ceremony right this moment, but thank you so much for your service to the Hill, and we're going to continue to brag on you and your students here for the next couple of minutes. But thank you for joining us today.
Colonel Green, happy to have you with us today. Be happy to hear from you.
Thanks for the kind words. Yeah, yes, sir. Thank you. Steve Murphy, thanks for the kind words. I've appreciated your partnership for 3 years. And while I have no formal top prize to WKU, thank you for all of, not only Steve Murphy, but all of you in the room, your support, the military-friendly community that is Western Kentucky University has been pivotal to our success. We've had a success with the time, and I very much appreciate all of your support. So thank you. Two great ones standing in front of you there today. Two of my favorites, now Lieutenant Dave Perry and Sean Allen. Hopefully, you'll be impressed by the success.
Thank you, Colonel Green. Have a great day.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you and thank you for your service.
I am sorry, everybody, for backed up so closely to Morgan going off. I'm trying to help him get to his seat. Go to your seat, Morgan. There you go. We are joined by Major Goose, who is Colonel Green's or our newest professor of military science, second in command for the unit. As well as Second Lieutenant, newly minted Second Lieutenant A. Koku, and Second Lieutenant Sean Alamo. And so, as Amanda submitted to the board, we are seeking your approval for a naming opportunity for the new training facility. And so, as we get started today, after recognizing Morgan, I want to show you a little bit of a brief video of the training facility, starring our two gentlemen who are with us today. And then we'll hear a little bit from Abe and from Sean around their experiences with Hilltopper Battalion, and then we'll use the formal naming opportunity. So we can quickly share my screen.
Very good.
You know, everyone's eager to go outside now and do their own fitness training. Rather than hear about the ROTC experience from me, Abe, Sean, I know you all have some life on the Hill that you'd like to share with the Board of Regents, so feel free to take it away.
Okay, I'll start off. Like they said, I'm Second Lieutenant Abe Poku. I did graduate from WKU as a 100th commissioning class. One thing not many people know about me is I did come from New York, which is a long ways away from here, as many I'm pretty sure you all know. But I consider that to be one of my best choices ever, is to come here and be a part of the Hill. And the ROTC program was one of the reasons why I stayed, and they accepted me into their family, and I'll do anything to give back to them. One thing that the Army loves to focus on is physical fitness and mental agility and mental toughness, and I believe the physical fitness part that we have is a testament to that, and not only to that, but to our cadre. We wouldn't have that without them, and they put forth that energy, even though a lot of them are retiring, or this is like their last station, as Colonel Green was, but they put a lot of effort towards that, and we really do appreciate that, because if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have such great opportunities. I know I'm not going to try to steal the thunder from my peer here, but we did utilize that facility a lot, and as many of you may not have known, there's like a ranger challenge that we hold at Fort Knox, where I currently work at right now. And about 2 or 3 years ago, we competed. Out of 38 teams, we were about 36 or 37. But utilizing that facility and our new cadre members and that inspiration and motivation of new cadets, we went from 37 or 38 to ninth place. And we hope that with this and with the maintenance of this, we'll further improve and then kind of show the world and ROTC that WKU is legit.
Thank you, Lieutenant.
Thank you.
I echo much of what Lieutenant Poku said. I'm Lieutenant Alamo. I'm actually from Kentucky, so this is the home place for me. I'm glad that WKU and ROTC accept me and their family as well. I echo especially what you're saying about the Ranger Challenge team. You can see a transition into how the academic facility, or the not academic, the PT facility has benefited us. As well, with the new PT tests in the Army, we don't focus on just push-ups, sit-ups, and run anymore. We have some more weight-oriented training. And to add to what Poku was saying about the transition to Ranger Challenge, but our traditional PT, you can see the shift from when Colonel Green started to now how much our PT has grown and we've gotten better as a cohesive unit. Thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenant.
So, Lieutenant Poku actually was our senior cadet this year. He led the Hilltopper Battalion through the planning for the staff ride to Gettysburg. And so they spent the year planning the staff ride. Staff ride involves leadership principles, applying leadership principles of the past to current scenarios and applying leadership principles to future scenarios as well. They look toward their leadership within Lieutenant Alamo was critical in establishing the peer mentoring and peer support network that is now part and parcel to our ROTC program. So we're absolutely blessed and appreciative of both their service now and their future service. And they are members of our 100th class. And so this year, we are looking to actually name the new training facility after our commissioning class. And so I'll move to the reading of the naming. So we are seeking the approval of the project name of the ROTC Physical Training Facilities to Century Park, located at the Charles and Luther Faculty Complex, in recognition of generous gifts from a group of very dedicated ROTC alumni. For more than 100 years, ROTC at WKU has transformed hundreds of college students into leaders of character for our Army and our nation. The Army ROTC program at WKU is one of the oldest in the state and traces its origins to the National Defense Act of 1916 and the spring of 1917 when the United States entered World War I. WKU offers students an opportunity to pursue coursework that can lead to a commission with the U.S. Army. The Army ROTC program is available on the WKU main campus and is administered through the Department of Military Science and Leadership in the College of Education and Naval Sciences. At WKU, more than 200 students take courses from the Military Science Department each year, and students represent engineering, science, business, government, English, and nearly all other academic fields. Each year, about 15 WKU students complete the Army ROTC program and earn commissions as U.S. Army officers. In the 2021-2022 academic year, WKU Hilltopper Battalion commissioned the 100th class second lieutenant. This philanthropic naming request is recommended in honor of the 100th commissioned class and in recognition of generous gifts from dedicated ROTC alumni in support of their program. The College of Education and Behavioral Sciences is happy to cover the cost of the sign for the area, and recommendation comes from President Cavoni for the philanthropic naming of the ROTC Physical Training Facility to Century Park.
Derek, I could add just one thing, Morgan mentioned it. We are very proud to have ROTC on our campus, and WKU has a long, proud tradition of being military-friendly. We're continuing that with this investment. I'm thankful for the philanthropic support. I'm thankful for the work of the cadets and their improvement in their physical health, but also proud of the careers that they go on to lead in the Army. It's a terrific program. It creates opportunities for college and affordability that otherwise might have college out of the reach of these participants. And so we're really proud of the prominence in our campus. Those of you who have been part of commencement, you know it's a really special moment when they're commissioned, they're in front of the whole crowd and they get thanked. And so with that, thank you all for your service and thank you for the way you represent our universities.
Any other questions or comments? If not, I'd entertain a motion to approve the philanthropic naming of the ROTC Physical Training Facility in Century Park. Have a motion, have a second.
Second.
Motion been made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. The next item.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for inviting us.
The next item on the agenda is the philanthropic update.
Thank you. Good to be with you
as
all.
As an information item. Thank
We're going
to
keep it short and sweet. I know we've been here for a little while today, so right. Some really encouraging news.
Take as long as you like.
I'm going to start out by taking a look at our year-over-year comparison for the last four fiscal years for total charitable gift receipts. For the past few years, we've been talking a lot about gift receipts, which is an indication of our financial health when we look at the cash flow that is coming into the institution. And so we're having a really good year. This is as of May 31. Of course, we run on a fiscal year, so we have a couple more weeks left. But we're up just about $2.5 million over last year in that cash flow. Major gifts also are trending up. About $13.2 million of that is coming from our gifts of $10,000 or greater. That puts us at a four-year high for both of those categories. And we are going to finish out June also very strong. You know, note that major gifts continue to run about a 70% rate of that cash flow. Again, major gift activity is what drives that cash flow activity. And we continue to hover right around that 70% mark when you look at that overall giving. Some other encouraging statistics when you think about major gifts. We closed 254 gifts above 10,000 is what we qualify as a major gift at the institution. And that's the highest for the last decade. So our team has worked really hard this year and really made good use of the last 2 years where we had some uncertainty and a downturn in the economy that our team has worked to really contact more people and build relationships that we're starting to see come to fruition. The number of current active major gifts pledged is up 40% over last year. So again, really, really great work by our team. This is cash flow and gift receipting, but for overall fundraising production tracking, so that includes things like HAF, that includes public media, that includes our deferred gift inventory, planned gifts that we're booking. We're right at $30 million overall for this year, which is where we ended last year, and that does not count this month's activity. We have several large gifts that'll be booked this month, and that's running about a 45% ahead of where we were last year overall. So. A lot of that was propelled by the Martin's gift, which we announced just last month, and we're really encouraged by that activity. Fiscal year comparison of donors. So when looking at alumni participation, I noted there at the bottom, nationally alumni participation continues to drop. You see that is occurring for us. That is not something that is out of the ordinary. But how do we mitigate the drops in participation is by increasing our pipeline of support. I've spoken to you all quite a lot about our DXO program and our outreach, using that technology-first approach to reach more individuals. And we feel that that is what is driving that bottom line of growing our President's Circle. So President's Circle has had a healthy uptick this year of participation, and we're continuing that outreach throughout this month. 4 years ago, we were at 2550 at this point. I'm encouraged by, there was a little bit of a lack in one of our vendor with our direct solicitation. Our team is continuing to work out this month, so I'm fingers crossed optimistic we may eclipse that 19 mark for our President's Circle, but overall, really great progress by our team, and focus on that strategic outreach, and the volume of that outreach is what's affecting that bottom line to grow our president's circle.
Amanda, the level for president's circle is $1,000, correct?
Yes, and your sisterhood gifts also drive that number. And we're doing a lot of great work on that currently.
Yes, we are.
Just wanted to provide you all a quick update on a benchmark study that we participated in this year. Each year, EAB, they have an advancement forum, which we participate in. This is the Advancement Investment and Performance Initiative Study. We are a part of an 11-member cohort that they benchmark our results against. Other institutions included in that cohort is University of Memphis, Old Dominion, Bowling Green State, Arkansas State, to name a few. Consistently across the report, we were 1 to 2 points off the cohort median. And that looks at overall gift production. That looks at cash flow. That looks at gift production across the bands of the pyramid. So when you look at annual giving, when you look at major giving, and those different thresholds, incredibly consistent across that, we were at the median. But the one note to take away from what I saw in that report was our ROI is significantly higher than our peers. We're about 16% below our benchmarks when you look at investment in our operation, but we are producing the same amount as our peers, so we've become an incredibly efficient operation. ROI for our operation, every dollar that's invested in our division returns $7.31 to the institution. So very proud of the work that our team continues to do to find the most strategic ways to invest and approach our database and approach our prospects with a strategic outreach. I wanted to add, too, there was another piece of information in the report that I found very interesting. So VSE, Voluntary Support of Education, is a national report that's conducted by CAESE every year. There's about 850 institutions that participate in that report. And looking over the past decade, about 20% of those 850 institutions saw significant growth in their fundraising operations. And so when you look at the top 20%, that's your elite privates, your elite publics that are fundraising machines. They saw significant growth. The remaining 80% of that saw either plateaus or declines. 33% of those saw results less than what they were raising in 2010. When I took a look back at our results over the past 10 years, we've had some modest peaks and valleys, but we've been pretty consistent. And so when you look at that across the institution, you look across our peers, we've been running about 20 to 30% above where we were a decade ago. So that consistency and that modest growth is going to help propel us for the future. So what's next for us? Just a few highlights of what we're planning to do going into next fiscal year. Inspire, engage, invest, celebrate spirit. Our team has really done a lot of great work over the last 6 months to come together and think about ways that we can very consistently and concisely communicate how we work together as a division, how our work translates into action-driven messaging. We're going to rebrand our website. You will see this through our direct solicitation and our publications, our social media strategy. So really excited to undertake that work over the next year. Where opportunity leads. As you all know, our opportunity fund is very important to our fundraising success. We added another $12 million to that total this year, surpassing $63 million. And we will continue to move forward towards that $100 million mark under this new umbrella. We continue to see just incredible enthusiasm and buy-in from our constituents as we look to support opportunity and access for our students. DXO 3.0. Again, DXO is something we talk a lot about. We're going into our third year of working in this technology digital-first outreach approach. Now we're looking at how do we take that and expand it across the entire donor pyramid. So we've been very focused on large volume, one-to-one, that president's circle pipeline growth. But now how do we take that and grow it to our major giving operation? How do we take those strategies and that approach scale back the portfolios for some of our gift officers and use that technology-first approach into major giving. And then also, how do we scale it down and do some one-to-many approaches? Will Harris and Taylor Grace Mingo, who are part of our team, have already been running some trials this semester at how can we film some engaging video, targeted that towards certain individuals and groups, and try to generate some acquisition through this approach. So we're really excited to continue to work in that way and move forward with our DXO program. As you all heard earlier, our Gordon Ford College of Business Building Campaign will be a really exciting initiative that we're working with Dean Shook on. We're participating on the planning committee and putting some really great plans together on how we can, since the building is funded by the state, how do we now fund the people and the programs inside of that building? We've got a lot of excitement. We already have people reaching out asking to participate, as we know this has been on our list for a long time. So I'm really excited to get that off the ground in the coming year. And then finally, a decade of fundraising success. Many of you might recall that our last campaign wrapped June 30th, 2012. We had planned several years ago to potentially kick off a public phase of a campaign. We all know what the last few years have brought to us through a global pandemic, lots of leadership changes and strategic changes in the way that we work. But nonetheless, we have a tremendous amount to celebrate. And so you will see more to come in the next few weeks and months as we look back on the last decade and really celebrate the great work that our team has done. Our staff is tremendous. There's so much energy and excitement amongst our team, and I'm really encouraged at the future and the growth that we'll have as we move forward.
Amanda, thank you so much for that great report. Does anybody have any questions or comments from Amanda?
I'll just thank Amanda and the entire team. There is a pattern some of you may have noticed when folks join leadership here at the university. They go through a process of coming to understand where we are. A lot of times there is a bit of a pullback in investment to get very efficient. And once they've done that, and kudos to Amanda who, for fundraising, a very scary time, managed to go through COVID without an awful hit to our success, but a complete transformation in the way in which we do business. She has managed to rebuild, recreate, and reimagine fundraising for the university. And we are among a few handful of institutions in the nation that are doing this digital engagement work. This is bleeding edge fundraising and was necessary for us because of the aging or graying of our major gift prospect pool. And so we're creating the next generation of major gift donors for the institution through this work. We're also building capacity within ourselves, because to be a major gift officer engaging through digital processes, you have to almost have come up through our system. And so we're creating a ladder for folks. We're at the place where we're going to begin reinvesting in advancement now that we've made a lot of the tough moves. There are two openings, as I understand it now, and there will be two additional openings in next fiscal year in advancement, all of which are focused on generating and continue to move that success number. So I'm really proud of Amanda. She was surprised by some of the things that she inherited and worked just tremendously to get us to where we are today and set the stage for the future. This will be Amanda's fourth year coming up, and so a good year for us to have a conversation around retaining her as well. So.
Any other comments? Linda, thank you so much for the presentation and your service.
Thank you.
The next information item is on diversity, equity, and inclusion, and it is an update.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. When the president asked us to come speak, I thought he wanted me to share my good idea about putting a pool up on the hill behind his house. But then I found out it was something even better than that, so he wants us to tell you a little bit about the diversity, equity, and inclusion plan that we submitted to the state. So just a little background, in 2017, we did a strategic plan and submitted it to the state because we were required to do so. So all the public universities, that includes the eight four-year and then the KCTCS system as well, has to go through this. Basically, the way this works is that it's broken into two sections. So we put the report in. One section is our quantitative data, so our actual numbers on retention, enrollment, and those sort of things. And I'll tell you about that in a second. And then the other section is our qualitative. So it's a narrative about our initiatives that we're doing on campus to try to improve those numbers. There are 18 points in each section. So there's 18 for the quantitative and 18 for the qualitative. So I will go over first the quantitative portion of that. So they grade us, I guess, on our enrollment for URM students, first and second year retention, 6-year graduation rates. These are URM and low-income students. And then degrees informed, and then our workforce diversity. They basically look at tenure-track faculty and professional staff in this area. These are the targets that were set. So the baseline, as you can tell, was set in 15-16. So that's what the actual numbers were. Then to get to 2021, we went in increments. So if you look at this, it's sort of a year backwards because we look at the numbers and what we did to do for that. So the report that we sent in was actually for 2021. But they kind of went up in increments to see how we did each year. And that's how we come up with these scores. So you can see in yellow that was our target for the year. Okay, then the state uses a rubric for us to look at. So that rubric includes our opportunities. So that's recruitment, enrollment, retention, those sort of things when it comes to students. Our success. So how are we doing with the initiatives that we have? And how are we improving things? And how does that affect our numbers in terms of enrollment, retention, and such. And then our impact, which is our campus climate, our inclusivity, our cultural competence, and that sort of thing. So for quantitative, we ended up with a score of 12, which 12 out of 18 may seem a little low, but actually in terms of everyone else in the state, we did extremely well. We have just one area over here that did not meet the expectations. These are things we're working on. But if you notice in the first one, we got a lot of twos, and that means that we not only met, but we exceeded our target. In the second, where there's a one, we didn't really hit that target, but we made significant progress in that area. So the score 12 is not bad for that, actually, and these are some of the things that we work on with all of our initiatives. So that kind of brings me to the next part of this, which is the qualitative. This is the one that's time-consuming, that takes a lot of time to go through. So all the initiatives we have going on across campus, like ISIC, with Dr. Martha Sales over here, she gives me data. We look at admissions. We look at all the retention plans. We have everything that we're doing in DEI and that sort of thing, and tell them the story of what we're doing to try to increase those numbers. And not only do we do that, but it's, did we implement those in good faith? Did we try really hard? Then there's a data analysis part of that. You know, was it effective? So we use the data to say, well, this worked. Sometimes it doesn't, which means we move on and get other strategies and try to find another way around that. And then the last part of it is, what lessons did we learn from what we did and what we're going to do next to help with that? These two strategies in particular are ones that I keep on writing about because these are things that we evolve every year in some sort of a different way. So we've got Ethan's group over here working on enrollment, and I get most of the data from them on this. But how are we going out and recruiting people, and how are we looking at URM? And this goes also beyond just, they basically, URM means African American, Hispanic, and two or more races. But they also, in this qualitative part, let us write about other things, like what are we doing for the LGBTQ plus community? What are we doing in terms of English as a second language and all these other things? So we get to add more to that story. So I always make sure that we get this strategy in there because we change it so much and we try different things every year to make it better. And obviously we do. And then the learning communities are also evolving. So when we started that, I added that one in, and then we kept on looking at that each year. It's like, what did we, because there's new ones that are added, new ways of looking at it, new ways to put classes together and that sort of thing. This year, we petitioned the state to add some other strategies, and these are really targeted. So we looked at hiring best practices. we looked at, we want to do a campus climate survey and see where we are. We also started an inclusive teaching academy that just graduated its first cohort. This is an approved through the state of Kentucky cultural competence certificate. We are the first in the state to do this. They were actually micro-credentialed at the end of it. We're also the first people in the state to do a micro-credentialing for that, or period, I think. But anyway, and then diversity workshops for new hires and onboarding process and stuff. We actually worked a couple of years on that one. So the good news is for that, in terms of fidelity, we got a perfect score on our narrative report for that. So they felt that what we wrote, we did a great effort and good faith trying to make a difference with this. The second one is, were they effective? So this is our data analysis section. Once again, a perfect score for those. And a lot of times, too, with the effectiveness, even if you didn't, your data doesn't show that it made a difference, as long as you can say, this didn't, but here's what I'm going to do to fix that, it's good, too. So that's one of the reasons for the score. And then the next part is always really important. I notice other people fall down on this, and WKU always does a good job, is that we always look at what we did and whether or not it was effective, and then we do what we can to fix that the next time around. And, you know, that part always makes me really proud. But we got a perfect score on that one as well. So, all in all, we got a 30 out of 36. You have to have, as a public four-year, you have to have a 26 or better. If we do not get a 26 or better, they will not let us propose programs until we fix it. So we always want to stay ahead of that game. And we have, since Michael and I started in 2019, we've managed to keep that score up there and be very competitive in the state. Which leads me to the next part. It's how did everybody else do? I tend to be very competitive, and I like WKU to be at the top and be the first and all that. And that's kind of just in my nature. So we got a 30 out of 36 and tied with UK. Now, when UK did their press release, they said they tied with some other university. When we did ours, we mentioned the fact that we tied with UK. U of L, last year, they scored a point better than us. They are not up there this time. And then the other ones. Murray was the only one that didn't get a score. They had a really low score, and they were challenging their data because I think there were some miscalculations in their quantitative data. But that's kind of how we look in the state and where we are with these efforts. So there's a committee that meets every year, and Michael and I, we have to tune in with bated breath and wait and see. And Michael said that, hey, you know what would be a good idea, to show them a clip of the video that where we got our score, because it's always like you're sitting there and then they get to WKU and you're like, oh. So can you play that, Jeff, or one of you all? Okay.
Why the sound's not working? It didn't work on the previous video either.
You all can read it That's the gist of things. I'm glad we're reading really fast here. I think we got closed caption on. But we were probably one of the institutions that did not get any criticism about what we did too, which was very proud. In terms of next steps, if you could, if you were following along there, the campus climate survey is where we're going. This next year, we're looking at that. We've got a couple of faculty members who are really good at statistical analysis that are helping us out to see where we might take make a priority on the campus and that sort of thing. We also have a lot of projects that we've got going on that are, the ends are still there, and we're working really hard on those. So, do you have anything you want
to
add, Mark?
Yeah, just to add the campus climate survey, that we're going to be assessing that data and information, and we're looking to create changes based on what we find and what we glean from that. We did do a survey with our students as well, so we do need to dive a little bit into that information and see what we need to do to improve their experience at WKU. We're also working with CIDL, working also with our DEI fellows. They're going to look at establishing a micro-credential for our students as well as our staff. And so I think in reverse order, we'll start with the staff. So we could become the first in the state with micro-credentialing again for our staff. So we'll be working through that this summer, hopefully getting that off the ground, getting it approved in the fall of 2022 and having that first cohort be in the spring of 2023, and then move to our students that year following. Lastly, we're going to go on a listening and talking tour with our students because I think it's important to see what students understand and know about DEI at WKU and to get a good understanding from them and to get their knowledge and then move forward before we move into that credentialing. And then lastly, this wasn't really just about our score and to brag, but it is kind of sort of, but it's also to show that we're using what we're responsible for to meet the initiatives of WKU and to help with the efforts as it looks to parts like this help with our recruitment, retention, and graduation here at WKU. And so we're a part of that and what we're doing. And so we just want to make sure that you understand that. And then lastly, looking at doing what's right for WKU and what's responsible for WKU within this work. And it's important that we're always on the pulse of those things and that what our efforts are helping to cultivate change and a good environment for our students here and our faculty and staff.
Ms. Chair, I'd just like to add, I'm really proud of Michael and Molly and the work that they've done, but also our entire campus community that has embraced the importance of creating a campus climate that embraces diversity, that celebrates diversity. More importantly, creates not just inclusion, but belonging. And that's how we're gonna move the retention and graduation numbers. If you noticed, we have the highest percentage of underrepresented minority students as part of the undergraduate population in the university's history, over 17%. And so sometimes there are misnomers and things floating around about the success that we're creating. And I always, data talks, BS walks. Got to look at the data. And what we're doing is creating remarkable success and closing that gap year after year after year. And so I'm proud of both Molly and Michael, but also the entire community that's focused like a laser on ensuring every student who comes to this university succeeds, no matter their background, no matter their finances, that we want to make sure that every person who comes graduates, and hopefully in 4 years. So thank you for your work, and thanks to everybody else for their work, too.
Thank you both for that great report. It's very enlightening to hear. And I was glad that we got just a little publicity about it in the local paper when they announced the results of that. So I think that's
Can
great.
We say that again? We tied with the University of Kentucky.
University of Kentucky.
Yes.
And that we beat the University of Louisville and everyone else? Okay. Just check.
Yeah.
Make sure.
They tied with us.
We
were at the top of the heap. But that's right.
They like to go in alphabetical order for some reason.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, right.
Our student regent, Matthew Winninger, this may be his last official meeting with us. And we want to comment on his service and how much we've all enjoyed getting to know him and being with him and thank him for his service. And we'll be happy to hear anything you'd like to tell us, Matthew, in case this happens to be the last official meeting that you attend.
I'm saying that I'm grateful to have served this role. It is a pleasure to work with you over this last year, and I appreciate your willingness to work with me. And I want to especially thank President Caboni, Provost Fisher, and Dr. Logan for taking the time to listen to myself and the rest of our cabinet as we work together to address students' concerns and actively sought out ways to improve the lives of the students we serve. So together we brought forth an egress backpack program that Provost Fisher touched on earlier in order to lower the cost of course materials for students and implemented the Swipe Out Hunger Initiative to combat food insecurity on campus. And those are just two projects that we are proud of, and we've made tremendous progress in other areas as well. And actually, currently, biking across the country, PepsiCo is very funding for all Starbucks users. So I'm in Utah with Starbucks right now, so I can't be with you all day in person. But we're coming through Bowling Green on July 7th and 8th. We'd love to see those of you who can make it. So thank you again for making this year as wonderful as it has been. I look forward to staying in touch, and you'll have an excellent new student region for Barnfeld, and I'm excited to see what all it does. Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Matthew, I'll see you in Louisville when you stop by Clayton and Croon.
I look forward to seeing you then.
Okay.
Matthew, appreciate everything that you've done for our campus. And, you know, the mark of success for a student government president is not how much press they get, but how much change they create. And you've created several initiatives that are going to certainly outlast your time on the Hill, that will benefit students for years to come. And so I'm so appreciative of the work that you've done, the meaningful change you've created, and congratulations on getting across the Rockies. It's all downhill, except don't let them tell you Kansas is flat. It's a false flat, and you're going to have crosswinds that make it a nightmare. So that's what you got to look forward to.
That's what I've heard. I appreciate that.
All right. Do we have any other business that needs to come before the board? If not, we'll stand adjourned.